time the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
All right, once again, it is time to welcome Gordon Goldsboro from the Manitoba Historical Society for another edition of Abandoned Manitoba on a lovely Sunday morning. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Bruce.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Last October, I visited a site in the valley of the Pembina River near the village of Larivere. It had a sort of an intriguing mystery nearby, and locals suspected that that place was connected to a military testing that took place during the Cold War. Well, today I'm going to share what we found and what we think took place there. But before we go any farther, I have to express my deep gratitude to Ty McManus. He first identified this site. He arranged a visit to it. He researched it thoroughly. And most importantly, he generously shared all his findings with me. Without Ty's work, we would know next to nothing about the site. We now know it was the location, starting in the late 1950s, of a radar testing range.
Okay, radar, what are we talking about there?
The name stands for radio detection and ranging, that uses radio waves to detect objects. The principle is that a radar transmitter feeds energy into an antenna. The antenna focuses that energy into a beam and sends it out into the world. It's kind of like a flashlight, but it uses radio waves instead of light. When those radio waves hit something, it could be an aircraft, a ship, even a storm, a tiny bit of the energy bounces back. The same antenna picks up that returning signal, and by measuring how long the echo took to return, we can calculate the distance to that object. The direction the antenna was pointed when the echo was detected tells us the location of the object, and changes in frequency of the echo tells us the object's speed. So we have distance, we have location, we have speed, and this is all critical information if that object happens to be a Soviet bomber coming over the North Pole. Of course, this was the 50s. They were all worried about, you know, the possibility. And so Canada and the United States developed three lines of early detection using radar. At the highest one was the distant early warning or dew line at the 70th line of parallel. Then there was the mid-Canada line at the 55th parallel. And then finally the pine tree line at the 50th parallel. Construction of stations along these lines, each having two or more radar antennae, began in the late 1950s. And they operated through the 1960s and 70s. In fact, the final decommissioning happened in the early 1990s. So this isn't far in the distant past.
No. So the site we're talking about today, who did it belong to?
The site we're talking about near Larivere, it was a facility of a company that manufactured radar antennae. That company was the corporate descendant of a Winnipeg-based firm, the MacDonald Brothers Aircraft Company. It had been established in 1930 to manufacture aircraft parts, but it went on to become a major wartime producer with nearly 5,000 employees. They built things like wings and, well, in fact, they assembled the Avro Anson trainer bomber aircraft. Mm. In 1954, it became a subsidiary of an English firm, Bristol Aero Industries, which later became Bristol Aerospace. And I think people might recognize that name.
Yeah.
Bristol played a major role in things like the rocket range at Churchill. In 1997, it became part of Magellan Aerospace, the name it carries today. Well, let's jump back to 1959. That's when Bristol Aero Industries began making radar antennae.
And that's when the site at Larivere was established?
Well, we don't really know for sure, but it certainly makes sense that if the company began making antennae in 1959, it would need a place to test them as well. You know, and it was a location that had to have, apparently according to the specs, an obstacle-free distance of 6,000 feet. That's over 1 mile. I think privacy was likely another factor in the site choice, you know, given the fact that there was concerns over Cold War espionage. So, you know, in a small rural community, a stranger suddenly appearing would be far more conspicuous than in a city. Well, the Pembina River Valley met the criteria, I think, And according to a 1961 newspaper article, the radar testing range that was built there by Bristol Aero Industries was the only one of its kind in all of Canada.
Do you know what the range looked like?
Well, a little bit. Say, based on our visit, we on the east side of the valley, about 1 kilometer south of Highway Number 3, stood a heavy steel frame that supported the radar antenna that was being tested. A small wooden building sat below it, housing the engineers who conducted the tests. On the west side of the valley was what they called either the receiving site or sometimes the target site, and it was exactly 6,032 feet, so in other words, over 6,000, from the test antennae. It consisted of a 4-foot diameter reflector that echoed back to the test antenna, and engineers measured the echo energy as the antenna was slowly rotated, taking readings in all directions. But one of the interesting things was they found that midday temperature variation sometimes caused the antennae to shake. So they got better results when they worked at night. So most of the testing, we're told, took place between midnight and dawn, which I think only adds to the mystery. You don't really know what was happening because, well, you never saw anything happening during the day.
You mentioned that 4-foot diameter reflector.
Mm-hmm.
You can sort of visualize that. But what did the antenna look like itself?
Well, a typical radar antenna design from the 50s and 60s, I'm sure they're quite different today. It was a parabolic dish made of steel and aluminum, and it was about 40 feet across, so it was a pretty big thing.
Wow.
It was built as an open lattice of ribs that formed a precise curved surface, and the idea, I guess, was to focus radio waves. The dish rested on a heavy base that allowed rotation and tilt, and the open lattice reduced wind resistance while maintaining a parabolic shape that they needed for accurate reflection. Once an antenna passed testing at Larivière, it was then dismantled into 12 pieces. I don't know why 12, but that's what they said in the documentation we found. 12 pieces that were then shipped to sites on the Pine Tree, the Mid-Canada, or the Dew Lines, where it was reassembled and put into service.
So how many antenna were tested at this site over time?
Well, we don't know. There was no public data on the company's production output, and I think this is probably because it was considered classified information. You know, if the enemy knew how many antennae the Allies had, it might be give them a bit of an advantage. All we really know is that a Bristol corporate history that was published in 1980 indicates that they were still selling antennae by that time, and they were still delivering spare parts. You know, but again, no numbers as to how many parts, you know, but it seems likely that 1980 was when things were kind of starting to run down, and the testing range at Larivière was probably dismantled around this time, but possibly even earlier.
So then if that's like over 45 years, so what's left there now?
Well, when we visited last October, we began at the target site on the west side of the valley. The area is now covered in large trees, and we thought,
yeah,
that's not a good thing for reflecting radar, but we suspect that they grew up since the site was abandoned, which then again suggests that it was abandoned quite a long time ago, and at one time it was much more open, suitable for some, you know, radar reflecting dish. We did find 2 small concrete pads that had these protruding bolts sticking out where something had once been bolted to the concrete pad, and so there were probably bases for towers that are now gone. And we also found 6 metal anchors driven into the ground that presumably sort of had guy wires going up to the tower to kind of hold it solidly.
Right.
On the east side at the test site, there were trees too, but there was also an open area where the testing equipment had once stood. And although we found no physical remnants, you could still see sort of sculpted soil berms where the equipment had sat. So there was sort of a bit of evidence. And we found a photo in that Bristol corporate history that matched what we suspected had been there, the little building beneath a steel frame supporting the test antennae. But it was not all gone, because it turns out about 1.5 kilometers to the northeast, that little building that had once stood underneath the antenna was still there. It was on the farmyard of the family who owns the former test site, and we talked to the farmer. He told us that he had once used that little building as a hunting shack. It's now used for storage, but in fact, it still had remnants of its earlier use. He showed us a sign, for example, that clearly dated from the radar testing era. It said on it, and this is a quote, "Trespassers will be prosecuted." By order, Bristol Aero Industries Limited, Winnipeg Division, A.W. Francis, Security Officer. It's a sort of an ominous warning. Very Stay away, formal. You Soviet spies.
No kidding.
You know, so I really got a sense of what this site was all about, and I really didn't think I would. I thought, you know, there's so little known about it, especially if it was classified military secrets, that we'd find nothing. But, you know, I have to, again, acknowledge Ty McManus, you know, that he was able to uncover so much about the site because, well, it sheds light on a period when Manitoba stood at the forefront of a surveillance technology that I think was seen as a key deterrent to Soviet aggression. You know, that was a system that kept North America safe at a particularly tense time in the mid-20th century.
Who knows if we'll need sites like that again.
Well, of course, technology has changed, and I suspect the equipment would look a little different. But yeah, it would be interesting if that sort of thing did develop again.
One question. You talk about these six metal anchors that you found, to presumably using guy wires for the antenna. Do you find those with metal detectors? You just hope to trip over them while you're walking?
Or? Well, in this case, we almost literally did trip over them because the trees were there. There was also tall grass, and they were sticking out of the ground maybe about a foot. When you found them, you found them. They were easy once you knew they were there, but it took us a while. We actually had a bunch of us walking through the forest until we, here they are. And once we found them, I've GPSed all of them now.
Oh,
so,
no kidding.
So if I ever wanted to go back, I can go right to them and put my foot down and there it is.
Another interesting edition of Abandoned Manitoba. Thank you for that, Gordon.
You're welcome.
Tell us what's coming up next week.
Oh, well, as I've argued here before, one should always be skeptical of answers provided by artificial intelligence. So recently I asked Microsoft Copilot the question, has anyone ever died in the Manitoba Legislative Building? It replied, no confirmed case exists. Well, of course, I knew the answer before I asked, right. And that answer is yes.
Ooh.
This somewhat macabre bit of Manitoba history will be our topic of conversation next week.
All right, well, leave us hanging until then. Thanks, Gordon.
Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.